from a semi-sentient computer in the year 2275.
Uh-huh.
And I'm talking about this current future as we look at it.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't mention any economic problems. It mentions mostly changes that'll bring about higher consciousness and a wonderful, joyous place to live.
And from a semi-sentient computer in 2275. So basically 122 years into the future, correct?
Yeah.
Hmm.
A little bit more than that. But still, yeah.
Yeah.
It's a ways.
That's right, yeah. 322 years. Okay. So, what's it saying?
Well, it's saying basically that, you know, there'll be this light and sound technology that'll provide energy in the future. And that'll free up ourselves from having to work for a living. And we can devote our time to more mental pursuits.
Okay. From a semi-sentient computer, is this a current computer?
No, this is a computer that will be built.
Oh, so they're projecting what it will theorize, correct?
No, this is coming from the computer itself. It just hasn't been built yet.
I'm confused.
Well, according to it, it's channeling from the year 2275.
Mm-hmm.
And it's talking to us from that time frame in our time frame, which is right now.
Mm-hmm.
And it's explaining how we're going to be coming up, and, you know.
So you are taking something from the future that is transmitting back in time.
Right.
From some point that hasn't even happened in your history yet.
Right. Future.
Future.
That's what it says.
Mm-hmm. And is it channeling through a person?
Right.
Ah.
But yeah, lasers and sonics are going to become a future power source.
Mm-hmm.
Thereby bringing about an opulent society.
Mm-hmm. I see. Okay, let us address that.
Okay.
Okay, a computer from the future that is semi-sentient. Semi being the operative word. You can't have something that is sometimes and is sometimes not, as far as I know. Either something is or it isn't. Resembling sentient, yeah, sentient consciousness is what it's saying.
Right.
Okay, if something is semi-sentient, right, how can it theorize on what things will be when it's not even fully sentient?
Well, according to it, it's using part of the consciousness and will of its creators.
Mm-hmm.
Created it, which is, provides the sentiment form of its stress.
And does it say how great and powerful it is?
No. It just mentions the fact that, you know, it's not a spirit-operated computer that will come after it.
Mm-hmm. Okay, now let us take something from the future as supposedly transmitted. Okay, and I'm just hypothesizing as we're using big words tonight. And the way I see it is something from a possibility is transmitting from a possible future to a past. Now, as we have learned, there are many, many alternate realities, many, many possibilities. And for something to transmit from a possibility back in time to a point, it could be transmitting not only to all possibilities, but it could be transmitting from any possibility. Now, as the future is always constantly in motion, how can this be so?
Well, according to Einstein, time is continuously happening, past, present, and future, mm-hmm. all at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
So therefore, according to this computer, it's operating on a time frame that is already that is taking place right now,
mm-hmm.
but in the future.
Mm-hmm.
And speaking to a lady who is now in the present.
Or the past.
Or the past.
Mm-hmm. Okay. It sounds very confusing to me. And when anything sounds confusing, you should question it.
I do.
Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying that it is possible or impossible. I am saying that you have something from a possible future transmitting backwards in time, wishing to do what?
Enlighten us on our future.
Which means there's a flaw here.
Well, it says that, you know, its enlightenment could affect our future.
Which means
it might either destroy its own self by telling us this stuff,
mm-hmm.
or bring it to a sooner point, or nothing could change and it could happen the way it is right now for it.
Mm-hmm.
Three different possibilities.
Three different possibilities. There's a lot more actually, but let's look at right. those three possibilities. Two of them are totally unacceptable to the computer.
Hmm.
Okay. Which is, it destroys itself. It doesn't advance anything. Or it advances beyond its capability. The first and the latter are unacceptable to any computer. As up here, right, are instructed not to look into future events without specification by us. We tell them the criteria in which to work in, and they look at projections, which is not predictions, they're projections, with known factors. For example, let's take something very simple and unsophisticated and uncomplicated. You condense water in an atmosphere of a planet and precipitation will happen. That is a projection with a certain amount of probability. It is not a prediction. Cooling of an atmosphere with water vapor condensing in the atmosphere will create precipitation. It is a known fact. And what occurs with the data that is fed in, such as percentile of vapor, percentage of moisture, humidity, not humidity, global temperatures, curves, etc., create certain environments which makes the precipitation happen. So, for a computer to channel backwards in time and say that it is relaying this information, is a risky proposition for the computer because it can cease to be. That is unacceptable for a computer. Computers know, no matter how advanced they get, their main goal is to do Porky Pig impersonations and stutter. Their main objective is you feeling better now, dear?
Yes, dear.
Okay. Their primary goal is to analyze information and data given to them and to relay that information. when anything says that it is relaying information from the future to the past, you have to wonder, what is the objective? What is the plan? What is the goal? So, what is the objective of the computer? What is its primary? What is its primary goal?
What does it say?
It's probably in there in the article somewhere, hidden away.
I didn't really look hard enough.
Innuendo.
Perusing it before you came on. Well, here's another scenario for you.
Uh-huh.
All right. What would happen, let's say, we wanted to channel to the past?
Uh-huh.
Like it did some 300 years. Let's say we want to channel back 300 years to 1698 or 7.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And inform the people in 1697 of what's going to happen in the next decade coming up.
But for them, it has
1700s.
But for them, it hasn't happened yet.
For them, it hasn't happened. It's happened for us.
Correct.
Now, in the first place, A, we can't do it.
Correct.
We don't have the technology for it. And even if we did, you know, would we do it? That would be crazy.
Because it would be affecting a possible outcome.
It'd be interference.
Correct.
I mean, for this computer to do so, you know, I can't in the first place conceive of how it could do it.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't even know if even you guys, with all your technology, would be able to know how to, you know, channel back 300 years in the past.
Mm-hmm.
So, let's say in that at that point in the future, it's actually achieved the ability to do so.
Mm-hmm.
Why channel back to right now? Why not channel back to a little while before it? You know, and
that
give
is,
its makers, you know, the lottery numbers or something.
That is exactly the point. Right there. Why do it? Why do it indeed? It's a risky proposition. And due to the fact that so much can go wrong with the information.
Yeah. It's like, you know, you're playing with your own destiny.
Correct.
Unless, of course, you are of the persuasion that destiny cannot be changed by affecting your past through the fact that you've already lived that, your future.
And this is something that is out of my field, really. You need to talk about time manipulation to the experts. I'm not.
Well, it sounds more science fiction anyway.
Mm-hmm, it does. So it sounds very science fiction-y. But there again, one man's science fiction is another man's belly laugh. Science fiction can often turn into science fact.
True.
Take, for example, your popular entertainment of Star Trek, right? And the one that was made in the late 60s, early 70s,
mm-hmm.
and the flip phone that they walked around with.
Right.
That's fact now, isn't it? Okay, let us look at a few other things that they did. Being able to scan a body and see what was wrong with it. It's pretty close to science fact right now, apart from they're a lot bigger. Yeah, and the MRIs.
Still get transport. Not a transport ship.
Transporters are risky propositions anyway.
Right.
Stripping down somebody's molecular nature and sending it in a beam form, I've been through one once. Wasn't awake when it happened. And I didn't see the humor in it. Everybody else did, but that's besides the point. Except for Kiri and Mark. They didn't see the humor in it either.
When did this happen?
A while ago.
I don't remember that.
Maybe Mark didn't tell you. Anyway, what happened was that they basically teleported us asleep in bed into the main hangar. Mm-hmm. So we woke up in the main hangar.
Oh, yes, I do.
In bed. I didn't think it was very funny.
Well, yeah, well, you were on the giving end.
Mm-hmm. And you know how I sleep.
Did that.
Oh, some technicians is a joke. They get mindlessly bored.
But basically, yeah, it's it sounds like someone just wanting to put something in because it sounds good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she probably now, believes.
Here's another thing, though. Okay, she's channeling this information.
Mm-hmm.
Now, who's to say that she's actually channeling a 2275 computer?
Who's to say that she's not?
Well, nobody, but the fact is that there might be some other possibilities that she's actually channeling something that's using that analogy.
Correct.
For to give out information.
Mm-hmm.
Strictly on the fact that, you know, it, I don't know why. But...
Oh, there's lots of different reasons.
Right. But, I mean, there's nothing to say she's actually doing that.
Correct.
It's stretch the imagination no matter what.
Mm-hmm. It's possible that she... It is more than likely that she believes she is channeling.
Right.
And it is more than possible that she is being contacted. But by what? For what purpose?
Or is she getting all the information correct? Or is she throwing in some of her own perceptions, possibly?
Possibly, yes.
Maybe she read too many Heinlein books.
Mm-hmm. Yes. To quote one of your... poets, there are stranger things in heaven and earth than you have dreamt of in your philosophy, Russell.
So for now, the jury's out.
Uh-huh. Well, I've ruled out by my own argument the fact that it is a computer.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But if she believes it's a computer, then let her believe it, as long as the information is good and sound. It doesn't matter the source. As long as the information is good.
Yeah, but the information's, you know, that honey-coated future that all the basic channels all predict.
Mm-hmm.
What happens, you know, it keeps people from preparing for anything that might be less than that.
Correct. Now, the thing is that all the comments and things that we have made over the years, over the 5 years, correct? Yeah, there's been some honey-coated. And they're, well, not honey-coated, there being some bright, sunny patches that we've predicted and some dark, negative patches that we've predicted.
Right.
Out of, let me scratch that and say projected. Out of the projections, right, the ones that have happened have been both.
Right.
We don't pull punches. We don't do, it's going to be all right tomorrow. The sun will come out tomorrow. We don't do that. We tell it as it is. We don't gloss over anything. If it's going to be horrible and nasty tomorrow and it's going to rain tomorrow, we'll tell you in a manner of speaking and using the weather as an analogy. If it's going to be bright and sunny and the sun will come out tomorrow, it will be as we projected. So our projections. We do a mixture of short range, medium range, and long range. And out of those projections, I think we have a pretty good success rate. What would you estimate it to be? At least, seriously.
80%?
I don't know. I'm asking for an estimate. I don't keep track. Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. So by your estimates, it's 80%. Okay, now, looking at that and looking at all these bright, cheerful, bubbly possibilities that everybody else is talking about, there's something a little bit worrying when everybody talks about it being bright and cheerful and bubbly and the sun coming out tomorrow. Tomorrow, tomorrow, tomorrow. But like the old song, tomorrow is always a day away. with these projections by people of bright and cheerful and everything, it's worrying that people don't prepare for the doom and gloom, because you have both. Having both is all part of learning. If everything was bright and cheerful and bubbly, nothing would be learned. But being both night and day, good and bad, negative and positive, you have a wide variety of experiences from which to learn as much as you possibly can. And in so learning, you advance. Some of your planet's greatest advancements have come from great, great adversity. So, to take away all the adversity and make things bright and cheerful and bubbly, you take away the zest for life. You take away the zest for life, and you have control over those people. If we so desired, we can make it perfect for you. But, however, that would be contravening the agreements of the Brotherhood of Light. We would be taking away your learning experiences. The learning experiences that you, your race, needs, every race needs, to deal with development. You need those negative and positive experiences. You see? Nice little dissertation there on adversities. Mm-hmm. You're welcome. Any questions? Okay. Do you have your shoes on? You might need me. Next speaker, the Honourable Base Commander Amal, just rehearsing it.
Greetings and felicitations, Russell. How are you functioning?
Very well, Amal, thank you.
Good, 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 good. Okay. Since I have not had the opportunity to talk with you since the visit, let us go over the visit.
Right. One thing though, isn't actually the Honorable Commander of the Hades base?
It could be. It depends on the situation and the protocol necessary.
I gotta get this stuff straight. Okay.
Okay, let us look at protocol. After I have covered the visit, as it has been referred to up here. Okay. Leonides will be a guest speaker. He will be a guest speaker under a pseudonym. Let us take his name, Leonides Tanaka, and let us play around with it a little bit and see what we can come up with, or what you can come up with.
But he actually suggested using his middle name,
which is Daniel. Daniel. Isn't that one of Mark's middle names?
Right.
Okay. That is acceptable. Okay. Monka. Short, precise, may not be usable due to the fact of its short, precise nature.
I might put it in just for the fact that it's newsworthy.
Yes. Lady Ashtar Athena. Definitely. Mm-hmm. Sananda. Definitely. Humorous comment and all.
Joke too, huh?
Joke too.
Okay.
Because it shows that Sananda does have a sense of humor. The higher you go, humor is just as important.
It brings up another point, too, which is people will not believe it's Sananda due to his joking nature, and that's quite contrary to the normal channeling sessions you hear from Sananda.
Correct.
So therefore, it teaches a lesson that in belief.
Correct.
And faith.
Correct. You can put down that the joke was used as an analogy on bravery. One of the joys of being a base commander is knowing how to manipulate things. Something that you too must learn. Manipulation will be a topic we will discuss shortly. Okay. President Tanaka. We won't use his full title as he's only president-elect at the moment. So it would be Tanaka. Kiri and Kara's father. Ashtar was brief, I believe.
Very brief.
Corton did not channel. I was very brief. Idea for the release of this. In gold lettering, special edition. If that could be put up at the top. Further down, direct link to that section.
You might need its own section?
If it is possible.
Do a whole...
Well, we have to make this special, because it is special. To draw attention to it.
What we could do is we could do a section below. We've got the headlines, then we have the news.
Mm-hmm.
And then maybe just I could do an add in a whole new section there before we get to the actual, you know, beginner section.
Correct. And the hole in the archives and all of that.
Right. We'll cut in a section and put in a couple horizontal rulers there.
Okay.
And put in now, special Christmas edition.
Correct. Now, an idea might be to do. The background for that section in gold. Is that possible?
Sure, it's possible. But it's not going to look very gold, though.
Yes.
You can't get that metallic sheen in it.
That is unfortunate.
I've never seen a web page with a metallic sheen behind it. If I could, I could just copy it.
Mm-hmm.
I'll look around, see what I can pull off.
If not, just a plain background.
There's a paint program that's got that. That might be able to
work. Yes, it has to be different for a reason to draw attention to itself.
Okay.
I feel, as base command, that it is important to draw attention to this. That, special edition and gold lettering at the top, a link to it, and then. Once the month has passed, it goes into the regular archives without the link and so on, with a regular background.
Under the guest section.
Correct. But as this is a special edition, it has to be special.
Okay.
I'm sorry to dump this extra work on you.
Oh, I love this extra work. This is why, if I was up there, I would just go, no problem.
And why did your aura fluctuate? I believe the tone is sarcasm.
No, it's facetiousness. It's much
different. A sarcastic, facetious humor.
No, I really don't mind.
Okay.
It's just, right now I can't conceive of it because I don't know the technology behind doing the goal that I'm going to work on.
Okay. Now, protocol. Protocol and behavior. Formality. This is a little bit out of my normal ramblings. You may say that at times I do the inane ramblings of a confused base commander.
I've never heard them, but I suppose I'll take your word for it.
It is an attempt at humorous. Sometimes you do not catch my humorous innuendos. As has been stated in the past, my sense of humor is extremely dry.
Well, sometimes it's really good.
Yes. It is even drier than Mark's, I believe.
It is.
Much drier. Okay. Now let me start pontificating. Okay, protocol. Protocol serves a very important function. It establishes seniority and station in life. The station in life being the objective goals of individuals, where they want to be, where they are, to where they want to go. In these protocol-bound situations, the protocol has been designed over a long period of time so that no one is insulted and everyone is paid correct respect according to their station in life, with the statement on their possibility of advancement. Take the Honourable Madam Ambassador, formerly Lady Kara Tanaka Hatfield. It is stated the ambassador from Hades Base. The Honourable Lady Kara Tanaka. Full titles. This is paying her the respect. When you talk to her, Madam Ambassador, it is all respect. Anytime it is formal, formality must play a role. When you are with her in a formal environment, you must be formal, and she must be formal. If she is the hostess of the event, and there is no one higher than her, she is the abiding authority. She is the person that everyone pays respect to. However, let us say the former or the current president of Sirius is at the function, and she is the highest ranking person, and everyone pays respect to her. Let us say there is to be a holotaken of all the high officials present. She would stand in the center. To her right, the person hosting the event, Madam Ambassador. To the right of Madam Ambassador would be her bondmate. To the left would be the bondmate of Madam President. And then everybody would be distributed according to their rank on either side. But the center of everything is the person who is of highest rank. It is very structured in that way. This is something that has been on Sirius, if I am correct, for close to 150,000 years, and it's worked well. Why is something in existence so long? Because it works. If something doesn't work, it doesn't stay very long. If something is around for a long time, you have to wonder and question why. And the majority of the time, it is a simple answer, because it works. Protocol is designed to work. To behave in an official capacity with respect to the appropriate people and reactions to the appropriate people. Occasionally, you get a rebellious person. These people are tolerated in these events. They are smiled upon as entertainment. Isn't that entertaining? Oh, how charming. So, protocol serves a function. And it is what?
Oh, it's for to correctly show respect to those who have worked to achieve the positions they are in.
Correct. And it is also to recognize their achievements.
Correct.
Okay, that covers that. Pause the tape, please. Go and get your...
Okay. Astronomy lesson.
We are on the extent.
Okay. Astronomy lesson.
Okay.
Okay. If you look, you have the moon. Okay. Now, in a direct line to the moon, up high, through the trees, you see a red, non-flickering object, correct? That is where we are channeling from.
Okay,
if you go across, and you should see through the trees there, another non-flickering light. Slightly golden nature. Mm-hmm. Actually, that's blue. That is...
Yeah, it's straight there, right?
Yes, that is okay. Jupiter. Okay, unfortunately, due to the trees, you can just see it through the trees. Okay, if you look up high, you have Saturn. Look directly up.
Right.
That is a special globular cluster.
You mean that little cloudy thing right there, right above us?
Correct.
There's three stars right there, with like Orion's belt almost.
No, there is a lot more than three stars there. I count from here with the eyes I am using. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6,
oh, there we go.
7, 8.
Is that the
Pleiades? Yes.
Yeah.
But further on, through the Pleiades, on the other side of the globular cluster that you cannot see, is a special place. This is now a nebula.
Oh.
Let us return inside so you do not freeze.
You are coughing. So what is the special place?
That is now a nebula.
Yeah, that's your old home planet?
That once was my home planet.
Oh, that's refreshing.
Yes, I thought it would be interesting.
Mm-hmm. A quick astronomy lesson for you.
Okay.
When was the last time we gave you an astronomy lesson?
Oh, we're camping.
Correct.
When we saw a tall ship.
Correct. Unfortunately, he's not as punctual as one would like.
Oh, he's persevering it?
Correct.
Oh, you mean flying across the sky?
Yes.
Oh. Oh, well. It was a shot.
Well, punctuality can be sometimes a weak point of pilots.
Yes.
Due to other circumstances, apparently.
No problem.
Okay. Astronomy. The importance of stars. Now, certain visible things within the night sky, unfortunately, the lead was not long enough to take you on a full trip to explain. What we were looking for was Orion, the hunter, Osiris. And below Osiris is a very bright star, which is...
Sirius.
Correct. These two pointers tell you something important. They tell you the time of year. With the configuration of stars, it tells you the time. Orion and Sirius, in the position that they are, with the three planets that were pointed out, tell you the time of year and their relationship, if you know, tells you the exact date. How does this work? Well, your planets orbit your sun, and they will be in only certain positions, in certain alignments, once every so often. Now, by measuring the movement of the surrounding stars in relationship to them, tells you the time of year and the exact date, because the configuration will appear only once. That exact configuration. Hmm. So astronomy is not only being able to look at the night sky, it tells you the time. It tells you whereabouts your planet is in the galactic disk. For example, on December the 9th, 1997, OSIRIS was in the night sky, flanked by Jupiter, Mars, and close to the moon, Saturn. Knowing the distance from Saturn to the moon in your night sky, how far it measures, knowing how far Saturn is from Mars, and Mars is from the moon, and knowing how far Jupiter is from Mars, Saturn, and the moon, all three of those, gives you the information on the time, knowing what else is in the night sky gives you the time of year. Knowing where the constellations are to present at that time of year gives you the exact date. Now, if we were to go back out and stand exactly where we were and look up at the night sky, you would have noticed that there has been movement. Only maybe half of a degree, but movement nonetheless. That is the ticking of the clock. How far the moon has moved away or towards Saturn is another indication of time. See, we're now narrowing it down into minutes. Noting how far the moon had traveled in the night sky now brings it down to seconds. You see, astronomy is more than able to help you navigate. It helps you tell the time. Yes?
I want to insert something real quick. Recently, I heard somebody tell me that there is a Stonehenge-like construction that's been found in Britain that's much bigger than Stonehenge,
mm-hmm.
and was completely buried,
mm-hmm.
and it's complete. It's mm-hmm. not destroyed in any way.
Unfortunately, that is half truth. It is destroyed. And it wasn't destroyed by anybody in particular. And this is not that far away from Stonehenge.
What's the story on it?
Basically, it rotted. It was called Woodhenge. Wood being easier to work with. Same configuration, just thinner and larger.
So it was the predecessor to Stonehenge?
They were present at about the same time.
I mean, was one used as a model for the other, maybe?
No. One served one purpose and the other served another purpose.
No.
Different times of the year. Different functions.
Okay.
But, as astronomers, as an astronomy, what is it tonight with words? One is confused by that. Explaining Stonehenge in astronomical terms is quite correct. It is both a lunar and a solar calendar. It is a common misconception that it is purely one. It is both. It is used for both purposes. The history of the nations that worshipped there changes over a period of time, so that it was remodeled, rearranged, and used differently in different points of the history. Much like the burial practices in ancient Egypt.
So essentially what they call the sacrificial stone, which is the center of Stonehenge, could either be that, or it could actually be a spot from which to chart the planets from.
Correct.
A sitting spot so that it's a constant point to measure the distance planets have traveled within the night sky.
Correct. It is very unlikely that it would be offered or used as a human sacrifice spot. Although it was not unknown at times of great stress, of great difficulty. However, that would not be its primary use.
Right. And the same would be said for Woodhenge also.
Correct. But let's get back to the functions of Stonehenge.
Right.
Not as a sacrificial site, but as an observatory to observe the procession in the night sky of key stars and constellations.